This is, I guess, the first engineering talk in this physics meeting, so I tried to make it very simple. That's the turbulent bound layer near a wall. X is this streamwise direction. It's good to define exactly what are the coordinates. And Y is the wall normal coordinate. And of course, Z is the spanwise. They keep coming back. And one of the things in this particular subculture, there are a lot of jargon, so I'll try to minimize it. One is the distances and all the variables are normalized by plus, namely in terms of variables characterizing, so they are non-dimensional units, suggesting that there are some kind of generic features of this phenomena that we talk about. So this study is really motivated by the desire to control drag and heat transfer near a wall, and apparently it's of profound economic significance, worth about probably over $1 billion a year in aircraft industry per 1% of drag reduction. So and there are two ways to reduce drag. One is to delay transition. The other is to accept turbulence as reality and see if you can manipulate it. And the latter seems to be more promising, particularly because there are some structures near the wall. And indeed, even if we could do the experiments, which we are trying, the technique of instantaneous vorticity field measurement is yet not developed. Therefore, we have to rely on direct numerical simulation. And I'll make the case, even though the simulation is at lower Reynolds number, perhaps the extension to practical Reynolds numbers is justified. So what do we know so far? That near the wall of a turbulent bound layer, there are structures which are crucial for producing drag and heat and mass transfer. So not only you can reduce drag of an aircraft, if you can reduce the heat transfer, you can run the gas turbine at a higher temperature, therefore you can achieve higher thermodynamic efficiency. So if at any point above the wall, you move with the mean velocity with respect to which the streamwise velocity fluctuation can be positive or negative, or the normal velocity can be positive or negative. So this is all over the bound layer jargon. It's a Q1, means quadrant 1, 2, 3, and 4. Of these, the second quadrant, where the ejected fluid from a wall produces a negative velocity, but the ejection is due to positive V. So this is contributed by these Q2 events, standard jargon in this field, and corresponding Q4, that means you bring high-speed fluid to the wall, therefore it produces an increment U, but it is associated with negative V. These two quadrants, or motion associated with these quadrants, are called ejection and sweep, which is quite descriptive, and these are the co-gradient Reynolds stress-producing events. The odd ones are counter-gradient Reynolds stress-producing events, and they are not that frequent. There have been many workers who have looked at the so-called flow by triggering on one or the other of these events, but this I don't think is very fruitful, because you can, in a random orientation of even identical structures, if you trigger sometimes on the tail, sometimes on the nose, sometimes on the finger, the ensemble average will not represent the instantaneous dynamics. And therefore, you have to develop some kind of phase-aligned ensemble average, which is pretty much what I've been trying to do for many years. So there is a evolving consensus that near the wall, contrary to Theodorsen and many others' claims or speculations, these structures are essentially elongated vortices aligned with the streamwise direction. That's pretty much the latest wisdom in this field. So let me give you a portrait of the nature of the beast. So this is like looking down on the wall. This is the flow direction, and this is fanwise. That means you take a very thin slice near the wall. And this is an instantaneous portrait of the flow. It has two distinct features. One is this regions of the red denoted, identified by vertical structures. I will get to this definition. And the other one, regions of low speed flow called streaks. So you see the structures, there are three distinct features. This is lambda 2, which right now you have long low speed regions watched for many years by Klein in the 60s. And there are instantaneous, these are not structures, they are ensemble averages. Structure. So instantaneous portrait consists of the coherent plus the incoherent part. This is actually at a particular plane, very close to the wall. Well, that's there. It is the instability of the slow patch, which is called streak, that generates this vortex. So that's the whole point of this talk. But this is in fully developed turbulent flow. The instability in fully developed turbulent flow is the point. This is lambda 2, which I'll come in the next slide, an identifier I will try to defend. Now, for the time being, imagine this is a region of omega x, or streamwise vorticity. This is the instantaneous portrait. If you take a cross section, so you have a ZY plane, a typical instantaneous vorticity field will have a streamwise vortex like this. So one side, it scoops up the fluid, it's called ejection, the other side is the sweep. It's rather simple to show that the shear increase due to the sweep down to the wall is much more than the reduction by the ejection. Therefore, this is why these streamwise vortices cause significant drag. So the game is only how to counteract this. There have been a large number of studies, particularly motivated by finding an application for MEMS, how to detect these flows instantaneously and then counter this flow. We wish to propose a mechanism where you don't have to know this information and collectively suppress, not accept them, but suppress the formation of the structures. Therefore, these red animals. So the quantity you saw, the red patches, is based on, I think Mr. Lasserer mentioned it, a vortex identifier, which has been shown, actually I don't need to cover, is shown to be superior to the other ones, and I will not get into these details. So it is based on the eigenvalues of the quadratic form of the symmetric and antisymmetric parts of the velocity gradient tensor, and under some physical reasoning, we suggest that two of the three eigenvalues should be negative. Therefore, all you have to do is to show the regions where the second eigenvalue is negative. So let's apply to a very simple flow, which is a model, Stern and I did, of a tornado. There's a clear vertical structure. So one of the definitions, Hunt, Ray, and Moin, escapes the core of the vortex. Our one does pretty well. And the more popular, Perry, Chong, Cantwell, Dahlman one, shows two vortices, which at least one of them is artificial, and we also explain why you would get those two. So this is the definition that Marcel Lasserre was using. So if it is two-dimensional vortices, all these definitions are identical. But if I don't remember, but I think that is an invariant, yes. This is because it's the quadratic form, I don't just remember, it's there in the... I don't know if it's zero, it could be it's a zero. Yeah, okay. Now, on the picture you saw earlier, if you limit this is in a practical turbulent bound layer, it could be easily 10,000. So if you look very close to the wall and look at the structures, this is an instantaneous portrait. These are the structures identified by this definition. Now, near the wall, the vorticity is highest, so therefore there is a problem in looking at vorticity. But if you look associated with the structure, there is a corresponding streamwise vorticity region. So therefore, these structures are quite reliable and sometimes much more indicative of the vortex than the vorticity magnitude of any component or the total. Of course, the total vorticity will be all essentially in the spanwise direction near the wall. Number of people... It's really the Hessian of pressure. So you take the second the derivative of the Navier-Stokes equation, and you arbitrarily say, well, near the wall, highly viscous region, it will essentially otherwise pick up only the spanwise components. We drop that term. It may not be the best definition possible, but I think it works better than others, especially in terms of three-dimensional flow, reconnection, all this unusual non-longitudinal vortices. This captures the details. How to identify a vortex? Well, those are the three examples I gave. Now, a number of people use local low pressure as an identifier of vortex, which can cause some problem if the vortices are in an interacting form, because pressure is a non-local variable. And therefore, you can have many regions of low pressure, but there is no corresponding structure. Wherever there is a structure, there is low pressure. But you can also have induced pressure from structures away. Therefore, pressure is not does not reflect the local dynamics. Okay. There's a reason to show that. So if you collect all the structures, you see predominantly if they are of positive oriented vorticity, they seem to have a slight inclination. And if there's negative, then it will show that that is central to the dynamics near the wall. So if you collect those, and I'll again, like if you have an ensemble average like this, it's like a disk, but if you shift and rotate and optimally aligned through a spatial shift and cross-correlation, you can extract the underlying dominant feature. And that's what we have been calling eduction. And this is done for positive or downstream-oriented vorticity, even though we use lambda 2. These techniques are outlined in these papers. And it's an ensemble average over 110 for both positive structure pointing vorticity downstream or negative structure with vorticity pointed upstream. These are all DNS. It's not yet possible to measure instantaneous vorticity field. So from that field which you just saw, this is the underlying ensemble average vortices. In the elevation from the wall, you see they're overlapping. There's an inclination and there's also tilting. And this is clear. Even if you have streamwise aligned vortices by mutual induction, they will form this angle. And this inclination is central to the dynamics near the wall. Well, considering other factors, we kind of try to simplify it as a more generic near wall structure consisting of structures overlapping and with alternating signs of vorticity downstream and upstream. It turns out that all the established experimentally observed events in turbulent bound layer are captured by this very simple model. So if you have a stationary probe, this is the streak. You see everywhere the fluid is lifted up. So you'll have long streak going on. Of course, in real flow, these structures will not be exactly periodic. And the extensively studied statistics and details of this quadrant 2, quadrant 4 events, Q1, Q3, internal shear layer, all these are captured in this. So we feel like this is the generic organized structure underlying the turbulent field in fully turbulent wall layers. Now there is one interesting observation. It turns out that local space average wall shear stress is not, of course, steady, but it seems to have large excursions and almost nearly periodic. This was observed by Jimenez and Moyne. But they noticed it, but they didn't pursue the subject anymore. So you go back to the flow field and try to understand what is the nature of the flow when the shear stress is so low, which is here. And so you see very little streamwise vorticity. To when it is about 50% higher, with significant streamwise vorticity. Well, I didn't want to get into this. This is a minimal channel flow that will bring up another subject. So it is a mini channel which below which you cannot keep turbulence over that area. So there must be an instability occurring. This part onwards can be blamed to our work. So there is a mechanism by which this flow becomes unstable, forms streamwise vortices, and these vortex by no slip condition produce a vortex of opposite vorticity, which is upstream vorticity, and that by no slip condition will produce another one. Pretty soon you'll have a pancake of vortices. And suddenly they disappear because of cross diffusion or planary connection. So it comes back to the quiescent state, whose instability again gives to new vortices. So let's look at the flow state and try to understand what is this instability. So this is an instantaneous over the length of this domain of the instantaneous velocity field. So therefore this is a constant velocity surface. It is also surface of vortex lines. So typically, as in a Lin-Korkos mechanism, if there is a vortex line, it will be tilted to produce this streamwise vorticity perturbation. But here, it is also a constant velocity surface, so a vortex line has no mechanism to tilt. So therefore, there's something interesting happening, and that's what we're looking at. Now, in order to do that, at a cross-section like this, this is the distribution of the instantaneous vortex line as well as constant velocity, and we simplify it analytically to this form. As I will show later, even though it's very close to the wall, maybe a few hundred micron in practical situation, neither the viscous effect nor the presence of the wall contributes to this instability. And the crucial variable is the vorticity perpendicular to the wall, and it is the instability is arrested by cross diffusion of this vertical up and vertical down vorticity. Okay, we find that this flow, the mean flow of the turbulent with a turbulent profile and this spanwise variation of the streak, the region of low speed is called streak. Well, this is coming. So that's actually, so it's more of a stability talk or instability talk. So with the basic state as the mean profile plus the streak, and we study its instability with respect to perturbations, and we find that this flow is unstable inviscidly to the sinuous mode, that means meandering snake-like motion, and is stable to the varicose or symmetric mode. And the growth of the perturbation for a Reynolds number, 2000 and 20,000, the growth rate at the linear stage at this energy level seems to be fairly independent. Therefore, one can justifiably speculate that it is indeed also the same phenomenon at a much higher Reynolds number, therefore at practical Reynolds numbers. We have dispersion relation and instability bandwidth and so on. I will not show those. If you take three different Reynolds numbers, the energy growth in the dimensional time increases, and you can explain all this because the spanwise wavelength decreases. But corresponding circulation also decreases with increasing Reynolds number. But fortunately, all of this, when you non-dimensionalize by the wall variables, seem to collapse. So again, you can say, okay, this may be a generic phenomenon. And this is the wall normal circulation. That means velocity here subtracted from the velocity in high speed. So that is a measure of the wall normal vorticity. And that also has a critical value below which these streaks are stable, above which it will be unstable. And I'll get to a little bit about what does this mean, instability. 7.6, yes. And this will use it later to show that you can use this information to control drag. Yes. Well, it turns out this is exactly. They did it for laminar flow. This is fully turbulent flow. And that's the point I will come to. Exactly. Now, let's consider a mixing layer, which is planar wave. So if you make a cut through this mixing layer, flow is left to right, you will have vorticity perturbation eigenfunctions as follows. Now, if you have a corrugated mixing layer, this will look like that. And indeed, the boundary layer very close to the wall is quite similar in many details. Now I'll try to explain what is this instability, hopefully physically. That this is a coupling between, if you like, this is the corrugated shear layer or mixing layer. You have a local n is the normal direction, s is the spanwise direction, and x is the flow direction. So any perturbation in the vorticity in the x direction, that's all there is no other in the basic flow, produces wall normal velocity, which therefore generates wall normal vorticity, and which therefore generates streamwise gradient of the spanwise velocity perturbation. So this is the chain, and we'll start here and show that this recycles, then we'll show how this comes about. So if you have, initially, this is a vortex line, and it's also a constant velocity line. So suppose these are the perturbation vorticity eigenfunctions, half wavelength apart. So in this plane, you can see there is a rotational motion because this is vorticity perturbation. So vortex line initially like this will be tilted up. So therefore, this difference is the normal vorticity perturbation. Now, this normal velocity perturbation, vorticity, has a variation in the streamwise direction. And this is possible only if the spanwise velocity changes. And so you have a streamwise gradient of the spanwise velocity. And how does it generate omega x? Well, this is again coupled with the, so there is a fluid element which is subject to this velocity gradient, the mean shear. initially, if you start with a situation where there's a gradient of the spanwise velocity, because of the presence of the shear, it will be tilted down, and therefore at a fixed plane, you'll have the spanwise velocity positive, that means less rightward, and negative leftward. So then, and then therefore it generates omega s, vortices in the streamwise direction. So what it means is that if you start with, this is looking down, this is the flow direction, if you start with spanwise vortex lines, which is usually the case near a wall of a turbulent bound layer, then at point A, the vortex lines will be tilted, so therefore now it has an omega x perturbation. Initially it has zero omega x, and half wavelength apart it will have omega x negative. So this will be the site for genesis of positive vorticity structure, and this will be negative vorticity structure. And of course with time, this rolls with increasing time, this is a periodic box, this rolls up into an intense streamwise vortex, very close to the wall. All these details possible only in minimal channel flow, yes. Now let's try to understand how this streamwise vorticity perturbation comes about. So at any given time, this is just the vorticity equation for the x component, and this is the instantaneous vorticity distribution. Now different people have claimed different mechanisms. So we plot each of these quantities separately at the same time, and you can see that the advection term, which came from the left-hand side, produces a suppression of whatever vorticity there was. So therefore, this cannot be mechanism effective here. Similarly, tilting suggested by this and Sehnsted and Moin, it shows that it has no contribution at the peak vorticity, whereas the direct stretching contributes significantly to the generation of streamwise vorticity. Therefore, there's this term rather than these other two terms, which is responsible for the instability. So again, that's mathematics, so stability. Now let's try physically. This is looking down on the wall, flow is left to right. This is one of those low speed regions called streak. So therefore velocity here is low, here is high, therefore you have a du dx positive, du dx positive. So these cross sections are shown here, du dx. Exactly where du dx is positive, there is also a vorticity perturbation peak right there. So therefore, whatever vorticity sheet is produced, it does not roll up as some suggested, but it is collapses by rapid stretching due to the meandering of the streaks. What happens to this perturbation eigenfunction in the nonlinear stage? So in the nonlinear stage, this perturbation forms streamwise vortices, and this is the local streak, and it continues. This is the elevation view. And it is a single mode. It's still quite similar to the structure extracted from the fully turbulent flow near the wall. Therefore, this seems to be the dominant mode, even though it's a single mode. Interesting thing, all this instability is happening in fully turbulent flow. And in terms of this, remember 7.6, this part is stable. But most of the streaks are here, and only very few are here. So how is it possible that you're continuously regenerating structures near a wall? So there must be some interesting instability mechanism. That's the transient growth that many other people have studied. So let's look at instantaneous streaks. This is the region where velocity is low, and these lines indicate the location of minimum velocity within this region, of course. And so if you, again, use this eduction, that means align by spanwise correlation, instantaneously the du dz, which is wall normal vorticity perturbation, you can get an ensemble average of the streak, but more important is the count. So, So here, this really is the corresponding 7.6. You see, most of these tricks are really stable. Yet, there is an instability mechanism. So it turns out this instability mechanism is the so-called mechanism responsible for bypass transition. We show this is the typical spanwise perturbation velocity in a bound layer, which is this case. So even if the most unstable mode is considered, this is the least decaying mode, starting with a very low amplitude, this is like 10 to the 6 of the actual perturbation, the normal mode will decay, but the transient growth before decay can have significant growth by a factor of about 10 or 20. Now, if it turns out that in practical situations, the initial perturbation is sufficiently high, then during the amplification phase, it can be sufficiently high so that nonlinear mechanisms take over. But the instability and transition is triggered by the linear transient growth. Okay. So I'm really done. So it's clear that if you have streaks which are not lifted that high, they are stable, where if they're sufficiently lifted, this is the low speed region, then it's unstable. So can we have a technique by which we can continuously stabilize the streaks? So there are two possible ways I think you can do it. Let's consider these are the streaks. So either you stretch out the sheets so that the slope is decreased, or you squash them together so that by cross diffusion you have an envelope which is again below the critical vorticity. So I'll show the success of one such technique again on the computer. So this is a fully turbulent channel flow. These are the streaks. So the channel goes, and these are streamwise positive vorticities. These are the blue ones are negative vorticities. So now let's impose a 5% outer circulation in this. That's the control flow, steady. And sure enough, you kill the streaks, and most of the drag-producing vortices disappear. Well, we have techniques. So this pretty much is the last transparency, is that if you just turn on this flow and let it evolve, that is up to 900 wall units, for the entire channel you get about 25% drag reduction, or 20%, I cannot see this angle. But if you maintain the circulatory flow, the control flow, you can indefinitely keep 20% drag reduction for the channel, but 50% will be for the turbine bound layer because they don't have the ends. So maybe I should remind what I've said. First, we suggested a new vortex identifier, and using this, we suggested a conceptual model of the near wall coherent structure, and this seemed to agree very well with the experiments. And then try to give some explanation how this vorticity, the streamwise vortices grow through the coupling of the wall parallel streamwise vorticity perturbation and wall normal vorticity perturbation. And by controlling these a large number of the streaks together by producing spanwise strain, you can suppress their instability, therefore formation of vortices, therefore achieve significant drag reduction. Thank you. I would like to. Yeah. Well, effectively, you can do it by having thin slits, but the beauty is you don't have to go to the scale of the wall. So you don't have to go to few microns. It can be 10 centimeter, and all you need is thin slits, but even easier probably was to have bumps, which will generate, therefore it has no drag penalty. You don't have to do anything. No, yes, I don't. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. No, these are all computations. There is no experiment yet done. We're trying hard. Well, if you have the Aubrey et al. Modes are don't have any, this are intrinsically three-dimensional. There is no two-dimensional analog. And that's also required, by the way, for, no, theirs is two-dimensional. And these are all parallel structures. But the basic mechanism does not, here, without three-dimensionality, you cannot have this, intrinsically three-dimensional. And that's involved in the transient growth mechanism, which is a linear, sort of like instability, even though each mode is unstable. Totally stable. Well, I have actually done, I have some transparencies which they show the parallel streamwise rollers like Townsend, and yes. We chose. Yes. Dimension. They come out to be about 96 spanwise wall units. So that's quite okay within the range. Length is exactly what we do. It's about 200 wall units. Diameter is actually I have it here. 30 wall units in the normal direction, and about you see this is about 30 wall units. They're about 200 wall units long, and this is what is observed in the DNS. No measurements have measured or revealed the vorticity field. Yes. Oh, Visa is variable interval space average. This is the jargon of the field.